The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. Critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position, not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There was only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Oh, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Good morning and welcome to the Sports Hub Golf Club. It's Hardy here with you on this Saturday morning where I didn't say anything yesterday to our producer, Mason Sousa, who was with me on the midday show yesterday, Mason. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mason, I never mentioned this. I will mention it right off the bat. I believe I am battling the beginnings of a summer cold. The dreaded summer cold. Felt it coming on in the pulse game of the Patriots-Lions game on Thursday night. Didn't mention it then. You got to mention it to the wife, right? Had to mention it to my wife when I woke up Friday morning, you know, with the sore throat at 5 a.m. But like that could just be lack of sleep. That could just be, you know, getting a little run down. Felt I was battling it off yesterday. I feel at this point it is safe to say I am in fact battling the beginnings of a summer cold. Will it stop us this morning? It might. I could tap out like Tiger Woods. We'll find out. We'll see how things go the rest of this month. It's a short show. It's the 1 hour Sports Hub Golf Club. We'll get into it right away. By telling you what's coming up on the show today, we'll be speaking with a gentleman from Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club because there is a tournament coming up there, a Clear Path for Veterans. It's a wonderful, wonderful charity and a great organization. They do great things, and it's going to be up at Lake Winnipesaukee. So we'll be talking a little bit about the actual event this morning, but a lot about the golf course, too. That'll be happening here in a little while. We're going to get a chipping and putting lesson from our friends over there at the Cape Club of Sharon, Stephen Daly, the head professional there. Chipping and putting, does it really get any more important than that in terms of what we should be working on in our game? And I believe Stephen will actually tell us when we get into the putting segment that when it comes to practice, if you're going to devote a percentage of your practice time to putting, what should it be? Steven's going to tell us 100%, which kind of makes sense. I don't know about you, my ball striking, whether it's with the driver, whether it's with approach shots, you know, it truly varies. You know, my swing changes in my own mind and the way I feel greatly from practice session to practice session, round to round. Consistency, you know, is my draw slash hook present? Am I actually able to play a bit of a cut? Who knows? You know, it just varies so much from day to day, week to week. But the putting is the one thing that you can do consistently because the movements are so small. The attention to detail, so great. When it comes to reading the green and having a good judge of speed, if you practice it, you get better at it. That is the one thing that can consistently lower your score. Now, if you're just going out there to have a good time and you just want to hit the ball well and you want to feel good watching it in the air, I think most of us do. I understand that. But if your game is at a point where you want to lower your scores, Steven says putting. You should practice putting and nothing else. Until further notice. So we're going to get a good we are going, you know, actually kind of going against that advice with the lesson itself, because it does incorporate chipping too. But we'll do a bit of both with Stephen Daly coming up here in just a little while. Want to begin this morning by talking about what's going on at the Northern Trust, which is being held at Liberty National in Jersey City, where Dustin Johnson is alone atop the leaderboard at 12 under par. He opened up with a 63, and the 67 he shot yesterday really wasn't all that impressive, seeing how, this is unbelievable, DJ birdied three of the last six holes yesterday. That includes an approach shot that he hit to 8 feet on the nearly 500-yard closing hole. So the 467 was pretty good, except he had nine birdie chances from 10 feet or closer. missed nine birdie chances from 10 feet or closer over the first couple of rounds. And yes, you can see where ordinarily that would be upsetting to him, but Dustin Johnson has a one-stroke lead over, hello, Jordan Spieth. Oh, hello, too much tuna, Jordan Spieth, where have you been? What's going on? Jordan Spieth, one stroke back at the Northern Trust. That's fantastic. Okay, Jordan. Look, I used to goof on Jordan, and he's still not my favorite guy out there, but I've liked him a lot more ever since he dumped two into Ray's Creek at the Masters a few years back and showed that he was human. So it would be nice to see Spieth finding something again, because he hasn't won in more than 2 years. You know, the next big thing, Jordan Spieth, and believe me, he was. Jordan Spieth had a legit claim to being the next superstar in golf, except he hasn't won now in over 2 years. So he started the PGA postseason, for lack of a better phrase, with the FedEx Cup run at number 69. So he's got to stay in the top 70 in order to advance next week to Medina. He's certainly put himself in a good position there by going out and shooting a 67 in the first round and a 64 in round two yesterday. A special mention to Troy Merritt, who I believe tied the course record at Jersey City with the 62 that he shot on Thursday. He followed that up with a 70. So he's only two strokes off the lead. Tough to come anywhere close to a 62 when you go out and fire that in the opening round. But Troy Merritt is among the players who are in a tie for third right now, two strokes behind Dustin Johnson, along with Patrick Reed, John Rahm among them. And then there is Rory McIlroy, who did get a two-stroke penalty yesterday for something that it's difficult for me to be too critical of this, because these guys are, once again, to borrow from, you know, the likes of Jack Nicklaus and others before him who have said he plays a game with which I am unfamiliar. But Rory McIlroy played with a two-stroke penalty for a good chunk of yesterday's round for moving what he thought was a loose impediment in a bunker. Turned out it was just a globbed-up piece of sand. He thought it was a pebble. He thought it was something he could move off of or away from his ball. When he went to touch it, it disintegrated. Turned out it was clumped together sand from some recent rain. And number one, to his credit, he called a rules official over and said, what happened? He said, look, I went to move this stone. Turned out to be sand. They said, yeah, you can't do that. That's a two-stroke penalty. And probably no one would have ever known had he not called a rules official over. But that's what you do in this game. You call penalties on yourself routinely. They went back afterward and said, there was no intent to gain any kind of advantage, so we're going to take that two-stroke penalty away. I would say this, two things. Number one, I don't understand why you would even mess around in a bunker like that when there's a two-stroke penalty that could so easily happen to you when you go to grab something. If it's not 100% obviously a pebble or a stone or a loose impediment, I don't know why you would mess with it. Once again, when a two-stroke penalty can mean the difference between, well, you know, where he ended up at 9 under par, he could have been at 7 under par if he had, you know, played the same for the rest of that round and 5 strokes off the lead going into the weekend. There's a big difference between being 3 strokes behind Dustin Johnson and 5 strokes back with 36 to play. But the thing I really don't understand is how much advantage you're really going to gain. And that's where I have to pump the brakes on my criticism of Rory McIlroy, because for me, I don't know about you, for me, a tiny stone next to the ball in the bunker or even on top of it, it is not going to change the quality of my bunker shot. It's just not, you know. I am, you know, from a bunker shot, I'm not trying to hole it out. I am not trying to get it within tap-in range. And this is me. I understand. I'm trying to get it in the general direction of the hole. I have tried to get it. I want it out of the bunker, yes. And I'm reasonably sure I can do that. I'm going to look at the green. I'm going to see how it breaks. I'm going to play it in the general direction of where the ball will travel once it lands. But beyond that, a tiny stone or a pebble next to or on top of the ball is not going to have that much of a... If there's a stick in the way, that's going to literally impede the progress of the club down toward the ball. Yes, that I will move, that I get. But these guys... I have to stop myself, because for them, it does matter. That could be the difference between that extra half roll that sends a ball into the cup after it lands, and they've read the green perfectly, and they know how to hit that bunker shot. So for Rory and guys like that, okay, for them it does make a difference, I guess. But I don't know, because I really don't understand the game that they're playing out there. It is at a level that is so far beyond what I do that I have to give them some leeway and say, all right, well, it was worth messing around with that tiny stone next to the golf ball. And then... The two-stroke penalty was taken away anyway, which I kind of don't get, because the ruling came down after the tour reviewed it and said there was no intent to improve his lie. And the 70 that he shot became the 68. What do you mean there was no intent to improve his lie? That's exactly what he was doing. Now, you're allowed to do it if it is, in fact, a stone or a loose impediment of some kind, but the fact is it wasn't. It was sand. So I don't know how you take away that two-stroke penalty with the explanation of there was no intent to improve his lie. That was the intent. The intent was to remove the impediment so that the lie was better. It's a bit of a semantics argument, and quite frankly, I agree. I think many of the rules in golf, and they have changed and they've gotten better, so that you are not penalized for ridiculous things that you have sometimes no control over, and certainly things that do not help you in any way to gain any kind of advantage in the game. But this one, I kind of agree with. And if you start moving stuff around in a hazard or in a bunker that you're not supposed to, and it ends up improving your lie, that's what the penalties are there for. But they decide to take it away, and he's 3 strokes off the lead, and now he's going to have to chase Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth from being 2 and 3 strokes back as opposed to 4 and 5. The other big story of the tournament has to do with Tiger Woods, who withdrew with an oblique strain. And I discussed this a little bit. Paul Perillo and I were on together yesterday, and Perillo had the best assessment of the situation when I said, "Oh yeah, he withdrew." Paul said, "You know, what did he shoot? Opened up with a 4 over par 75, which put him at the time. Let's see. We know that Troy Merritt had the lead with his 62 after the opening round." So that would have put him 12 strokes off the lead, let's say, for sake of argument. Yeah, after he's 12 shots back after round one, Tiger Woods has a mild oblique strain, withdraws from the tournament, to which Paul Perillo said, "What a baby." And I really thought Tiger was past this point. I really did. I thought he had gotten himself to a point in his game where this was not going to happen anymore. That he had won another major championship, he won at the Masters, and that hopefully, perhaps, he would no longer become the guy that that tapped out of tournaments. Apparently, he's not that guy anymore. And it, you know, for him, a mild oblique strain maybe is a lot more than what I would consider a mild oblique strain. And the fact is, he didn't even hit full shots on the back nine of his pro-am Wednesday at Liberty National. And so this wasn't something that 100% popped up in the middle of his round on Thursday or right after his round that forced him out of the tournament. He was feeling this on Wednesday. After his round, he did speak a little bit to the media, and he said his back was a little stiff. But he said that's just the way it's going to be. It would look so much better if he hadn't gone out there and shot 75 and then withdrew. I would give it more credibility if he had gone out and shot 4 under and said he couldn't play because of this mild oblique strain. And that's really what it comes down to. Can you play? Can you play without further injuring yourself? Are you injured or are you hurt? All these questions come into play. And if you can go out there and play without doing further damage, then you should play. You should play for any number of reasons, and I don't want to get into, I don't want to moralize too much, but this is what these guys do. They play hurt all the time. They play, and they don't even play hurt compared to what other guys do in other sports, so let's keep it real on that front. But can you play? Can you play without injuring yourself anymore? Then you should play. My gut tells me he can play. My gut tells me he would play if he had gone 4 under as opposed to 4 over. And that's what the real difference is. But now he says he's hopeful to play next week at the BMW Championship. Oh, by the way, he's won twice there. My gut tells me he's going to play. So how bad is it, really? He's also going to have to get back into the top 30 if he wants to go to the Tour Championship. So he's in good enough shape right now to where he can go there, show up. He doesn't have to worry about playing the rest of this tournament. But for Tiger Woods to pull out after going 4 over with a mild oblique strain, it's not the best of looks. All right, we're going to get our lesson coming up next here from Stephen Daly, Cape Club of Sharon, chipping and putting. A little bit later, we'll speak with Kevin Roberts from Lake Winnipesaukee, and I'll tell you about the tournament going on up there, Clear Path for Veterans. All of that on the way here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Get ready for the most important thing you're going to hear all day. It's happening right now in the Sports Hub Golf Club. I'm here with Stephen Daly, head professional at the Cape Club in Sharon. We're going to be doing our tip of the week, and it's all about chipping. And I'm going to tell you right now, Stephen, the only time I have seen noticeable improvement in my game over the many years I've been playing this game is when I've focused in on my chipping and pitching. It's not from, you know, banging 7-iron after 7-iron at the range or driver or even putting. It's chipping and pitching the ball. So whatever you have for us today, like I said, is going to be the most important thing golfers hear all day. So tell me, what just top of your mind when I say, hey, man, my chipping and pitching is a crime scene, which is true. So, you know, this is very honest assessment of my game coming to you right now. What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Honestly, the first thing that comes to my mind is contact. You know, it sounds very simple and easy, and, you know, it obviously goes throughout your whole bag in your game. But, you know, the quality of the contact is the only thing that's really going to give you the improvement that you're looking for. You know, it's about carrying the ball the right distance, controlling the spin. You know, so how we create that contact is obviously very important, but the quality of the strike is, you know, A1.
Okay, so, and that makes sense to me, especially with, well, you know, with both, but really with the chipping, because this is where you're treating this really as a long putt in terms of what you hope the results to be. You know, you want to give yourself a tap in when you do grab the putter, or maybe even, you know, turn into one of these guys who can chip the ball in from off the green. So how do you work to get that consistent contact? Because this is what happens. I'll either chunk it and it goes 2 feet in front of me and I'm still off the green, or I'll thin it and I shoot it 30 feet past the hole. So how do we develop that consistent contact with the chipping?
Yeah, so I think the number one misconception on chipping and pitching is having that ball back in your stance, shaft leaning forward, hands forward. But really all that does is expose the leading edge. So that's where you get that chunky, you know, lay the sod, chili dip right in front of your shot, which we've all had. But really in your setup, what you want to do is get that handle of the club more in a straight up and down vertical position, and that'll allow you to use some of the bounce of the club so the club will interact with the turf a little bit more seamlessly.
Okay, so that's number one. Don't do that big forward shaft lean. Don't try and get too crazy. What about ball position? Again, like middle of your stance, like any other typical, I would say, iron shot with a short iron?
Yeah, exactly. You know, certainly not in the forward in your stance unless it's, you know, some high arcing shot. But if we're talking just a middle, you know, middle range, middle height trajectory type shot, middle of the stance is perfectly fine. That'll allow the club to kind of perform the way it was designed, you know, with that handle a little bit more straight up and not leaning forward. You'll use some of the bounce and the club will kind of just brush right under the ball, you know, along the ground, and you should get some of that clean contact.
Stephen Daly is the head professional here at the Cape Club in Sharon. Grip pressure is something that I struggle with too around, you know, on the shorter shots, whether they're pitches or chips around the green. I know that I'm trying to strangle the club sometimes because you feel if I really just focus in here, how important is grip pressure and what should the grip pressure be? Should it be any different from other shots?
In some instances, yes. But, you know, we've all had those holes where, you know, maybe on a par five, we're up right next to the green and two. All it takes is a chip to get up next to the pin for our birdie. But that's exactly when you start to tense up and grip that thing a little tighter. So maybe right before you decide your shot, the last thing that goes through your mind is just to soften that grip a little and, you know, allow that club to work a little bit better.
I think it's an old Nicklaus tip where he said if you're concerned about your grip pressure, take 1 second, you know, the moment before you're going to take the club back and squeeze the grip, you know, almost as hard as you can, and then relax your grip. And chances are with, you know, whatever pressure you've applied after squeezing it real hard and then relaxing, that should be your grip pressure for that shot.
Yeah, you know, I've actually never heard that, but I could use all the help I could use for my own chipping, so I might try that.
I'm giving you the tips. Okay, chip shots as opposed to pitch shots. Let's talk for a minute about the dreaded, you know, flop shot over a bunker. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, we should all start carrying 64-degree wedges and try and be Phil Mickelson out there, but people do tend to tense up and have problems with having to get the ball up and down quickly. Maybe you've short-sighted yourself. You don't have a lot of green to work with. What's a good way to kind of combat the fear of those shots?
You know, in golf, realistic expectations are some of the most important things. So I would really maybe take a shot that I was a little more comfortable with, play it a little bit away from the pin, and maybe try your luck with a 15-foot putt or a 20-foot putt rather than, you know, you might have a chance to get it within a couple feet, but you also might leave it in the bunker in front of you or something else. So for someone like a higher handicap, you might have a better way to lower your scores by trying your luck with that 15 or 20-footer.
See, the problem with these tips, Stephen, is they're too practical, and I feel like they're too easy to put to use. So, I might scrap this whole segment because it's just making too much sense, quite frankly, for this show. I like it, though. I really like the idea of not going crazy with, you know, shaft angles and doing something different with what the club is designed to do for the chipping and the pitching, just a normal setup. You know, keep it in the center of your stance. Keep that shaft the same as you would for another shot. And also, don't get crazy by trying to hit shots that you really have no business hitting, especially if you haven't practiced them. Play to your strengths. Go for the fat part of the green. Chances are you're going to have better results with a 15 or 20-foot putt than if you try and hit that flop shot and you've only got 4 feet of green to work with. There's so many bad things that can happen with a shot like that if you're not used to hitting them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and there's definitely ways that you can practice and learn those escape shots. But, you know, if you've short-sighted yourself from the fairway or from the tee or from the rough, you know, you obviously don't have the ability to get it where it needs to go in the first place. So you're probably not in a position to be laying the club open and trying to hit these hero shots when you could take a little bit safer route and, you know, preserve a bogey rather than a double.
golfers are more than willing to take their medicine when they hit into the woods and like, okay, I'm not going to be a hero here and try and get it through that opening there. And they'll punch out and try and make up the stroke elsewhere. Around the greens, though, it's much tougher to have that type of discipline. But that's exactly what you're saying to do.
Certainly. And, you know, there I do believe there are instances where you should be taking the risk. But I think just assessing the situation and, you know, maybe you take the risk when it's not a bunker in front of you rather than a grassy area where even if you do leave it short, you still have an opportunity to get an up and down. So just assessing the situation and making the best decision for the situation you're in.
Trust me, if I'm close to the green, there's a grassy area in front of me, there's no decision to be made. I got a putter in my hand. I do not care. Go ahead. Give me all the looks you want. And if I'm a little too far out, I got a hybrid in my hand. And I'm going to put a putting stroke on that thing. And it may not be beautiful. It may not be anything that you're going to compliment. But guess what? I'm going to be putting with my next shot as opposed to Lord knows what if I try and hit some kind of a chip or a flop that I have no business hitting.
Hey, the old adage, it's not how, it's how many.
I love it. I love it. Stephen Daly, head professional, Cape Club of Sharon. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
Now, joining us now on the telephone is the director of golf at Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club. His name is Kevin Roberts. Kevin, thank you so much for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So the reason why we're talking today is there is a tournament going on up there that we want people to find out about and know about for a clear path for veterans. But before we get into the ins and outs of the golf tournament, I just wanted to talk to you about Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club because this is one of these destination courses that I'm sure not everyone has had a chance to play yet, but people should know about this place and realize what's going on up there. So we'll start with the golf course, Kevin. Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club, it's a private club. You guys have been around for what, 15, 20 years now, something like that?
Yes, our owner, Bernard Chu, he bought it in 2000 and brought in Clive Clark, our architect, and he worked on it for about 3 years. So they got all the holes open in 2003. We got into our new clubhouse in 2004. So we've had everything up and running since 2004.
And you guys are on a huge piece of land up there, something like 700 acres. So it seems like it's a pretty spread out piece of property. What else goes on up there besides the 7,000 yard golf course that you have?
Well, it is. Our total property is 700 acres. The golf course is spread out over about 400 acres of that. And the nice thing is we have one house that's out on the golf course. It was here prior to Bernard buying the property, and that's it. So when you're out there playing on a majority of the holes, you only see the hole that you're on. You don't have condos or houses lining the fairways. So you really have that feel that you are in the mountains of New Hampshire.
And they couldn't get that one guy to move, huh? No matter how much they offered him.
He was stubborn.
Hey, it happens from time to time, but that really is unbelievable. Even in New Hampshire, to find like that amount of land where, for the most part, you're just out there with nothing but the golf course, that's kind of rare.
It really is. And like I said, it's just such a great feel. Even when we have a big event like the Clear Path event here, where you might have close to 100 people, when you're out on the golf course playing, you're really only seeing the foursome that you're playing with. So it doesn't feel like it's packed out there. It's just a really special feel. We've got tons of wildlife out here that feel very comfortable on the grounds. Moose and deer, turkey. We've had actually quite a bit of sightings of bears this year. So they feel very comfortable here because, again, we're out in the middle of the woods.
I don't know if I feel all that comfortable with playing alongside the bears, but if, you know, if they leave me alone, I'll leave them alone.
They do a good job of leaving our golfers alone.
Okay, good, good. That's good to hear. So the golf course itself, I know it's been ranked among the best new courses in the region. It routinely makes the list of best courses in the state of New Hampshire. Tell us a little bit about the design. It's kind of set in that area near Lake Winnipesaukee, where I know it can have a variety of terrain up in that part of the world.
It really does. We have a lot of elevation change. Our hole number one is a perfect example. From the back tee down to the fairway, it's about a 150-foot drop. So playing the golf course, you're going up, down. We have a lot of elevated tee pads that lead down to the fairways. So you have a great view of the hole in front of you. There's no tricks or blind shots. And it's just a really fun golf course. It's always in great shape. Our superintendent does a great job with keeping the golf course in tremendous shape. But probably one of the biggest compliments we get from golfers, especially the first time they play here, is just how fair it is. For a wooded New England golf course, you actually have a little bit of leeway off the tee if you don't hit your driver quite as straight as you would like. You need to be a little bit more accurate as you come into the greens, as we have about 92 bunkers out here. But it's a very playable golf course, and that was one of the goals by our owner. He didn't want Clive to just come in here and build the hardest golf course that he could. He wanted it to be playable for our members, and it's a great challenge for all skill levels, from golf professionals, like when we hosted the New England Open, up to 30 handicappers.
So you say that it's a fair golf course, which, you know, in a private club setting, it can go either way. It can be set up for people who don't want to be beat up when they're playing their home club, or, as I imagine a lot of your members have, this as like a secondary club near a vacation home. Or it's a bunch of golfers who got together and said, we want this course to kick our asses on a routine basis.
You can definitely make it a more difficult course by going back to our black tees, which are the back tees on the golf course, and they come in just a little over 6,900 yards. But a majority of our members and guests will play a course that's in the 6,400 range. Again, very fair, with everything laid out right in front of you. And they're up here on vacation. They want to have a good time. Like you said, they don't want to go out and get beat up for 18 holes in four and a half hours.
Right. Kevin Roberts, he's the director of golf at Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club. Private club, is there any opportunity for people to play if they are not members of the club?
If somebody is a member at another private golf facility, then they can have their golf professional call me and we can make a tee time for them. But other than that, the only other way somebody could play here is, one, if they're playing an event like the Clear Path event, or if they are a guest of a member.
And when they do show up there, let's say I'm going to get a chance to go up there and play for the first time, what should I be preparing myself for greens-wise?
Well, the greens are very hard for people when they first play here to read. There's not a lot of undulation in them. They run between 10 and a half and 11 on the stem, so not super crazy considering we don't have a lot of undulation on the greens. I always tell the story, when we had the New England Open here, a fellow golf professional that I know who played in a lot of events throughout New England, very good player, he played. I saw him after the round, and I said, Bob, how did your round go? And he said, Kevin, I've never stood over so many putts in my life where I didn't know if it was going left to right or right to left. And I think that really sums up the greens, as you can see a lot more break in them than there is, sometimes not reading enough. But even trying to figure out the general, is it going left to right or right to left, especially in the mountains up here, it can be challenging.
What happened to this course is so fair? What happened to that guy I was talking to a few minutes ago? That's not fair. Well, I don't care for that.
I think Clive got his revenge a little bit on the greens in regards to reading them. And what's funny is probably the person I've seen putt these greens better than anybody in the 15 years I've been here is Clive's wife. I was lucky enough to go out and play with him and his wife one time. Clive also did Belgrade Lakes up in Maine, and you can definitely see some similarities between the two courses. But he was here for an anniversary party for them, came down, played here. I went out with him and his wife, and she putted these greens like I've never seen. So she had a little insider information, I think.
Okay, so the architect's wife, who has the best insight into how his brain works, is the only one who can really decipher what's going on in those greens. I would just roll everything dead at the middle of the hole. If I don't know if it's going to break left or right, I'm just going right at it.
Well, exactly. That's what you have to do.
Yeah. Well, it looks like a phenomenal course. I've heard about it. I know friends who have played it. I would love to play it one day. Maybe I'll get a chance to do it as part of this Clear Path for Veterans tournament that we're going to be talking about here in a few more minutes. But Kevin Roberts, the director of golf at Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club. For anyone going up there, it's in New Durham, New Hampshire, not far from Lake Winnipesaukee. And like I said, Kevin, anyone who's played it, all the pictures I've seen, it looks like just a gorgeous facility, 700 acres, almost 7,000 yards from the tips, and apparently you might run into a bear.
There's a possibility.
All right. Well, hey, it all sounds like a good time. So, Kevin, I appreciate the time. Thanks for being on the show, and hopefully I'll get a chance to see you in person one day there at the course. That would be awesome.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you up here.
Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Back to wrap things up here on the Sports Hub Golf Club. I want to thank Kevin there from the Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club telling us about the golf course where a certain tournament will be held coming up on September 9th. This is for Clear Path for Veterans New England. This is their third annual red, white, and blue golf tournament at Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club. I'll tell you this right from the start. All the proceeds benefit Clear Path for Veterans New England and their mission to build a wellness community supporting those who served. And the Clear Path essentially serves as, that's the center. That's where everything comes together to connect veterans and helping them navigate through the whole system of benefits and support resources. And, you know, they do a wonderful job of celebrating service. So whether it's their community providing the opportunities to continue to serve through the activities that they do, or the family gatherings, or just, you know, strengthening the community, it all happens through Clear Path for Veterans. It's a wonderful organization, and the tournament itself is going to be a great day. Once again, September 9th, Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club. And after speaking with Kevin, man, do I want to play that course. There's a lot of different opportunities to get involved day of tournament. You can always be a mission partner and sponsor that way. You can be a lunch sponsor, come up and just be a whole sponsor for the day. You can just join the tournament. So I will give you a couple of different ways to reach out and find out more about it. I guess the easiest way would be to go to the website, which is clearpathne.org. You can also email Donna Bulger, dbulger at clearpathne.org, to get more information. I've seen them on Facebook. I've seen them online. Be able to get up there on that Monday, September 9th, it's a 9:45 shotgun. So you got time to head up that morning if you want to, up to Lake Winnipesaukee, or do something the night before. Maybe you're one of these lucky people who even they have a vacation home up there. But there'll be the registration 8:30 that morning, lunch at 11:45, awards and dinner starting at 3 p.m., which is nice. You know, a lot of times for tournaments like this, you're going to get a very early shotgun start at, you know, 8 a.m., or you're going to have one at 1 or 2 in the afternoon, which means you have to be up there either really early or you're going to end up staying very late. Not the case with this red, white, and blue golf tournament. The third annual for Clear Path for Veterans, September 9th. Once again, it's a 9:45 shotgun start, and you'll be I would imagine you'll be done with awards and dinner by 5 p.m. So that's a good day. It's a good full day there at what sounds like a fantastic golf course, Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club in New Durham, New Hampshire. Once again, for more info, clearpathne.org. The website is clearpathne.org. I understand that Tim McCone is standing by. Is it Mike Flynn who's in with Tim McCone today? Is that correct? Okay. So, all right, very good. I don't know that these guys are going to be talking about any golf today, but unfortunately the big story is Tiger Woods withdrawing. Tiger was withdrawing from the Northern Trust. I'm going to gloss over that for a second because Paul Perillo summed it up yesterday beautifully. What a baby. Mild oblique strain. Am I right?
I'll tell you what. The heart you showed today, Hardy, playing hurt, that's what impressed me the most.
Can you hear it? Can you hear it in my voice?
You can. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But you powered through.
It's the beginnings of a summer cold. That's what this is right here. But I'm doing there's only a couple of things that I truly believe in shortening the duration or the severity of a cold. And they're zinc based, right? What are you laughing at, McCone? This works. This is proven. This is not. I don't want to disparage any company that may be an advertiser, but there are plenty of products out there that say, you know, you take this and it doesn't do anything. It literally does nothing. There's no science behind it. There is science behind zinc. All right.
Okay.
Zinc adheres to the membranes in your you know, nasal passages. It prevents the cold virus, if it is in fact a virus, from replicating.
Okay.
And you can cut down on the severity and the duration of your cold by doing zinc. So I do a zinc. It's not a spray. It's almost like an ointment that you put inside your nostrils, and I do zinc lozenges. And it's fluids and rest, McCone. You know, it's not that part of it is not rocket surgery. Just a little bit of rest, which is difficult this time of year, but we're going to try. And fluids, you got to push those clear fluids, water, gin, light rum, Bacardi Silver. So that's going to be my
simple
plan.
I like it.
For the rest of the weekend. What do you guys have coming up on the show today?
I think we're going to talk a lot of football. Antonio Brown seems to be doing well right now with the Oakland Raiders, so we'll certainly get
into
that.
It does a disservice to true babies like Antonio Brown to call Tiger Woods a baby for tapping out with a mild oblique strain. Antonio Brown, now that's a baby. What a baby.
Unbelievable.
Well, also a crazy baby. He's a crazy baby.
How is that crazy, Hardy? He just wants to wear a helmet that is banned from the league. And, you know, right. He just signed a new $50 million deal. Would you hold out, Hardy, if this was your prize putter?
Well,
the one that you won a major with, the one that you went to war with. And, you know, the tour bans the putter for whatever reason. We'll make, you know, we won't give a reason. We don't need it. They ban it. They gave you a year to get you used to another putter, but you could still use that in the big tournaments. Finally, day one of the new season said you cannot use it. You walk away from the tour.
Yes, it all sounds
there
perfectly reasonable. See? Perfectly reasonable.
In
of
your
course.
Prime.
Yes.
A 28-year-old Tiger Woods, you would walk away from the tour.
Yes,
I don't blame you.
Yes.
See, because you have principle.
And I think everybody is going to end up being on the side of Antonio Brown.
Why wouldn't they?
Ready for it. Yes.
Because
yes.
I would be on your side.
Yes.
Let the man use his putter.
It's going to be, you know what? It's going to be a dull show if you guys are going to talk about it because everyone's going to side with Antonio Brown.
I know. I don't even know why we're going to bring it out because it's insane.
Right.
It's everybody's insane.
It's a
let him have his helmet.
Non-story. All right. Well, I look forward to hearing everyone agree with you on that. And we will do the... the same thing next weekend right here, 7 a.m. Saturday morning, the Sports Hub Golf Club. Thanks to everybody for being on the show today. Stephen Daly there, the head professional Cape Club of Sharon. Also, Kevin from the Lake Winnipesaukee Golf Club. And once again, Clear Path for Veterans, clearpathne.org to find out more about that tournament coming up. And as you just heard, Tim McCone, Mike Flynn, they're coming up next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.